Hi, it's Bruce Rouse here from Carbonetics, and I'm interviewing Hayden Washington, Dr. Hayden Washington, who's Director of Sustainability Projects at Willoughby City Council. Good afternoon, Hayden. How are you?
Good afternoon, Bruce. Great, thanks.
Good
to talk to you.
Very good to talk to you. And you've got a long history, I understand, in the environment.
Going back to 74 when I started, yes.
yes. And a lot more than I do, actually. You've had a series of quite impressive posts in the Director of Nature, the Nature Conservation Council of New South Wales. You've been on the Australian Conservation Foundation as a councillor mm-hmm. for 4 terms. Media officer for the Wilderness Society. You've written numerous articles and 2 books about the environment. And now you're at Willoughby City Council. And it's thank you for the time today.
Well, that's fine, yes. And I guess one tries to do what one can, yes.
Yes, yeah. Now, the purpose of this call really is to talk about the good things that are happening in response to the climate change challenge
mm-hmm.
at Willoughby City Council. And we've heard some very good stories about what you're achieving. So, and I'm hoping that this can help inspire others to action, because the way I see it, there's a lot of doom and gloom around about climate change, and sometimes that might frighten people to not do anything. But in actual fact, what Willoughby City Council has done is an example of positive action, achieving some very good results. By how much have you reduced your, how much has the council reduced its carbon emissions over the last year?
Well, over the last year, since because one of the problems we had when I started in April last year is that we hadn't done a hard carbon audit since 2002. So when we did that, we thought because we'd been taking action, but we hadn't been doing hard audits to keep up with it. But in fact, like many organisations, we'd actually crept upwards. So we were actually, in terms of our baseline, we were actually 25% above the baseline in 1999. And now we're 11% below it, but most of that has come through the uptake of green power and gold standard carbon offsets for our fleet, because most of our energy conservation initiatives are actually in progress. So there's lots of things we're doing, such as voltage controller systems that can knock 10% off your average energy use for a site. We've installed one of them as a demonstration at the moment just to check up on it, and we actually got a 19% saving on that site. So, and we've got a cogen and a solar thermal system coming in for our leisure centre, but they're not, as I say, it's the other two, the green power and the offsets, you can do straight away. All these other things take a little bit longer, but should be rolling in next year, and also relamping of a lot of our lights, like most of our places, and sustainable building retrofits. We now have a sustainable building officer on board, as well as a climate change officer. So, yes, we're certainly determined to meet our target of a 50% reduction by 2010. So we're on track to that. But, of course, the really difficult thing is going to be how do we get our community to follow suit.
That's a great target, a 50% reduction by 2010.
We're set in the year 2000, which was really quite visionary of the council at that time. The interesting thing, I suppose, is that the science is now showing is that's more like what we should be doing.
Yes.
At the time, it was a great vision, but now it's sort of becoming more of a must, if you like, in terms of the way the climate science is panning out.
Yes. And if we look at the climate change challenge, I guess the more traditional approach has been to firstly, try to reduce your energy consumption, and then get some savings, and then out of those savings, buy green power and carbon offsets. But you've decided that the problem is more urgent, haven't you? Is that correct? And you're moving ahead with the green power purchases and offsets.
I mean, I totally agree with your hierarchy. That's our hierarchy too, of energy conservation, renewables, and then offsets in green power. But The thing is, we also want to show some progress so that the green power and offsets are things that you can do straight away. As I say, they're really sort of money based. Yes. The other thing is when you're going out to tender any OIs and actually setting things up and putting solar hot water on your roofs, etc., take longer. So they'll be rolling in next year. They're all happening in progress at the moment, but we can't include them yet until they're actually rolled out and working. So, but the urgency, certainly the urgency of it, is we accept. I mean, we're the only council in New South Wales that's produced a sustainability charter that actually shows where we're going. And you know, there was some discussion whether we could meet our target or whether we'd have to reduce it. But we decided we're going to be fair dinkum. We would meet the target that we set. So not just tokenism. So that's my job, to make sure we get there. But I'm pretty happy we will. But as I say, the elephant standing in a corner, if you like, overlooked, of course, is how you actually do a similar program out for your community. And that's something we're also planning to roll out in March of next year, a community climate change campaign called Climate Clever, probably. And we're just working on that at the present time.
I'll come back to your community in a second, but just one more question about your 50% reduction target by 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Have you identified how much, what percentage of the savings will be achieved from the energy efficiency and energy conservation measures you're now implementing, like the cogen and the solar?
Well, it depends if you want to include cogen and solar as actually energy conservation measures, or whether you know, if you include them under that brush, or whether you sort of, whether you put the solar in as a renewable energy measure. But in terms of the potential savings, yes, we have identified it, but it's we're trying to do the major, well, for instance, street lighting. If we could get street lighting, if we could get Energy Australia to actually act on street lighting and putting energy efficient lights without charging 80% more, which is the current proposal, then of course that would be 15 or 20% of our total carbon footprint done in one go. So there's various issues like that which are political, if you like, in nature, that we, like other councils, are lobbying on, but they're not under our control. In terms of others, yes, we have done rough models, but I didn't actually tally them all up before we got here. But certainly the majority of that reduction was aimed to be due to energy conservation and renewable energy rather than the offsets in green power. As I say, they're basically, when we've done everything we can do with the other two by 2010, then we'll, if we have to, make up the difference with green power and offsets. So this first step was just, I guess, to at least show that we're on the track, that we've reduced from 25% to 11%, and so we'll be on track to our 50% reduction. But most of that 50% we hope will come out of energy conservation and renewable energy.
Yes, yes. Yep. So, sorry, just another observation before mm-hmm. we move on to the community. So from what I understand it, your emissions were creeping upwards from your 1999 baseline.
Yep.
And then...
or even from our 2002 audit as well.
Yes, but now they're on the way down. Mm-hmm. What caused the change? Like was it the sustainability charter,
what caused the change to actually really make sure they're on the way down?
Exactly. Yes.
I think it was really I guess our councillors saw the need. I think our community saw the need. The councillors were responding to that. So councillors talked with senior management, and basically they agreed that we were going to take a strong stance on sustainability and really make it a priority. And that's when they created the position that I feel. And then we went on to actually upgrade what we call our e-Restore program, which was a campaign on the environment and sustainability to actually really increase the projects that were happening there and really put a strong focus on climate change to make it our flagship issue.
Okay.
But as a number of our councillors observed, they thought the community was way ahead of them, and it was that community response that was driving them. So we've got, when you've got your council that's supportive and you've got your senior management that's supportive, then that means you can then get things really happening.
Yes. Oh, that's great. And then that leads us back to the community, because in essence the community has, driven this to a certain extent through the councillors and then through to the actual management of the council. So, in terms of the community, have you worked with the community to set a community reduction target, greenhouse reduction target?
We had one in our original 2000 when we set our targets. We also had one for our community, which was for a 30% reduction by 2015.
Yes.
Now, the interesting thing is that when you actually get into the nitty-gritty of this, and finally Energy Australia is giving us electricity consumption by LGA boundary, which has only happened in the last couple of months. But the problem is problems of baseline, because the baseline we had for that, which was 1995, is really just a state average times our population, and that's not comparing apples with apples with the actual electricity consumption you're getting real time now from. So to actually work on that, to get that 30% reduction is very hard, because we have no real baseline that will compare to the actual consumption data we're getting now. So we're really going to have to start from last year, where it was the first year we were given data for the real consumption of electricity in the LGA, and aim for something like a 15% reduction by 2015. So we're still aiming for a serious reduction, but it's only really now that we can actually track the real amount of energy that's being used in the LGA. But one of the interesting factors of that is half of that energy consumption is coming from business. So that sort of highlights the huge impact that business can have by taking up sustainability initiatives.
So that's very interesting. I haven't heard of any other local governments that have managed to get consumption data, real consumption data, by local government area. So,
you've been trying for a long time, and they do admit that it's not 100% reliable, but it's better than just multiplying your population by the state average, we want to track what happens when we roll out our campaign for the community to actually see what happens with real-time consumption. So finally now we'll be able to have a go at doing that, and we can actually see how some of our programs. I think the interesting thing is, while our community was really into sustainability, what our survey showed is they didn't necessarily understand that putting in a solar hot water system or taking up green power were two key ways of really reducing your footprint.
Yes.
They tended to think of, public transport and catching buses, which is true, which is great, but they weren't thinking of these other initiatives, which is really where we're going to focus on with this current campaign.
Yes.
Because while we were getting over 80% of people saying they wanted action on sustainability in various questionnaires we've done, we still think we've only got about 6% of people who have a solar hot water system, for instance.
Yes.
So. That's a change we'd really like to accelerate.
Okay, so that's it's great to hear that you've got the measurement in place of the electricity, and presumably that's the major single source of community emissions, electricity consumption.
Gas is only less than 10% compared to that. I mean, I'm talking of course scope 1 and scope 2, if you're obviously aware of the distinction, rather than scope 3, because when you look at food miles and transport and all those things, they're a lot harder. They're estimates you're making of them, and we will be working on those issues, but your electricity and your gas consumption are the hard data you can get, which you can actually really see what happens in terms of decreasing that hard data. And of course, if we can do that, we can stop another coal-fired power station being built if we all reduce enough. But
Could you summarise then just quickly what your strategy then is with the community to get that reduction?
We're just about to we're putting out some expressions of interest at the present, well, in January, in terms of solar hot water, heat pumps, which we'll distinguish particularly for areas that are shaded, which we have quite a lot of in Willoughby. So heat pump hot water systems, solar hot water systems, rainwater tanks and photovoltaic panels. So we're trying to get preferred suppliers for those that can actually roll out the products cheaper for our community, but even in some ways more importantly, simplify the process, make it easier for our community to actually... Oh, sorry, the other one we think you're is looking at is actually an expression of interest for green power that... there's a moment, if you go into the Green Power website, you're faced with 12 icons, and I'm sure a lot of people freeze up and don't know what to do and probably give up at that stage. So all of these are aimed at trying to make it easier, simplifying the process for the resident to easily take up these initiatives, but also hopefully save them cost as well. So that's, if you like, the nitty-gritty side of it. So it's focusing on the hot water systems and your green power. But we're also running a big community engagement campaign at the same time. So these things are available as the nitty-gritty end and the education engagement campaigns going on at the same time to really try and make people think, well, now's the time to actually take that action.
And how often...
Oh, sorry, one thing I should mention also is we're doing 300 free sustainability audits for our community. That's our first phase. We'll probably continue this on when we've used them up, but this isn't just a very quick and dirty, poke some CFLs and run away sort of thing, which sometimes happens. But this is, if we're about an hour and a half in the house with the resident going through actually looking at electricity consumption, standby appliances, fridges, et cetera, so... that's a very important part of that campaign, that you can actually get people working with you for an hour. And so we'll give them a report, and we'll also go back after 6 months and see what changes have been made. So we'll document the effect that those audits have had. So I think those sustainability audits are a fairly powerful tool to actually engage our community in action.
Yes, yes. And have you considered using something like I think the City of Newcastle has the Climate Cam, where you can see the emissions on a monthly basis, and you could perhaps be putting in your data from your LGA, from your electricity distributor, into that.
Well, yes, so we've been up there, and we've talked to Peter Dorman, and he wants to come down and have a look and talk to us shortly to see what we're doing. We looked at whether we could actually put the clock face around, because the system here in terms of substations, et cetera, is somewhat different than the Newcastle situation, so that side of things became harder. But what we're going to do is put our footprints, both council and community, on our website so that you can track them at least quarterly. But in terms of that real-time data, that's still something we've got to work towards. But I think when we've talked to Energy Australia and the network and the substation situation, it's actually a lot harder to do that in Willoughby than it is in Newcastle. So in terms of the real-time data where you can see a peak, but we're certainly still investigating that, because, they were able to get suburbs competing against each other to reduce consumption, et cetera. I think that's quite clever. But it's just a matter of the practicality and logistics, whether we can do it here. But certainly we want to track our footprints for both of them on our website. We're setting that up at the present time.
That's excellent. And in respect to your target, would anything be happening if you hadn't set a target?
I think there still would be things happening, but I think a target definitely helps galvanise action, especially as it looms. It's not very long to 2010. I think, again, that was a contributing factor of, whether we were really going to get serious about sustainability. And I suppose clearly it was a desire that they wanted to take a leadership role in sustainability as a council. Our target we haven't set a target for a date yet for moving to carbon neutrality. At the moment, our charter says as soon as possible after that, but we may set a date after that. But really, I guess we're focusing on getting to that, a realistic, making sure we get to our first step, and then we continue on to get to carbon neutrality. So, yeah, I think targets are definitely a good step, and hopefully on Monday the Commonwealth Government will be setting a good one, a good target for us to reach.
Yes, yes.
We can hope, anyway.
Now, in what way has this focus on reducing carbon emissions been of benefit to the City Council and your residents?
Yes, it's, I guess, I think the benefit is people feel helpless to some extent. If you're looking at the fact, since we started, what we first did when I started here was we actually thought, okay, how would we embed sustainability? How do we go about making sure that everyone's on the same wavelength? So we actually had 3-hour workshops with, well, not quite all our staff. We couldn't get to the depot, so it's about 90%. Where we sat down for 3 hours and went through some of the sustainability, some of the information, but then basically said, well, okay, if you were serious about this, what would you do in your area? So we essentially asked their help and their ideas, and we got a fantastic response from people we never knew that were into all this stuff. And from that, we set up a staff sustainability working group that meets regularly and talks about and gets. So people actually felt that they were on board with this process, and I guess that also, we're talking about the benefits, that ties in with you know, working with our community. Our community is concerned, our community wants to do things, and now they can see things that are happening, they can take part in it, and if we then, with our new campaign, go back and make it even easier for them to do things, I think, as you say, there's this great desire to do something, so here is actually a way of, so I'd say in one way it's a social cohesion
yes.
Aspect that people are actually doing something about something that worries them very deeply, and that applies to council as well as our community. I mean, there are, of course, cost savings involved with many of these things. I noticed one of the questions you sent me was talking about, you know, the payback period for some of these things. Well, as I indicated, my quick response, I'm more interested in the carbon payback period than the dollar payback period. Probably my finance manager would kill me. But in terms of actually doing things for sustainability outcomes, it's really more about the carbon payback as much as it is about the pure dollar payback. For instance, you know, people say, well, you'd never do photovoltaic because the payback period is over 40 years and so you'd never do it. Well, obviously we know we're going to have to do it because we need a new form of energy, and we need to have demonstration sites that show this so that you would be doing photovoltaic even though the payback period is not as good as some other things.
Yes.
So I don't think we should get caught up too much in the payback period purely financially. In terms of the benefit to council itself is, I'd say, this far greater positive sense of camaraderie that we're actually doing the right thing. And I suppose, you know, it's also an ethical thing. People like
yes.
to work for an ethical organisation, and they can
yes.
see it's also a sustainable, ethically sustainable organisation.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a really important point there, in that people can despair about, you know, some of the predictions of about, you know, dangerous climate change, but by doing something you're empowering people, and it's sort of losing that helplessness, and it's energising too, I would imagine as well.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, obviously Al Gore's made the observation that denial and despair have one thing in common: you don't actually do anything. And what we're trying to show is that it's not only easy, but it's not very expensive to actually take meaningful action on climate change. I think a lot of people are crying out to know what they can do that will be the most effective thing and will make a difference. So I think actually making it easier for our community, and we talk about a program Sustainability Made Easy, actually being able to do that for our community in some ways is far more significant than what we do as a council. in terms of our carbon footprint.
Yes.
But,
yes.
I mean, we need to do that as well because we need to lead by example. But
And you've touched on an important point there, which is the relative expense of this. Your expenditure on your green power and gold standard credits, I imagine, is less than your total energy spend. Is that correct?
Yes, it is less than our total energy expenditure.
And your total energy spend is probably quite a small percentage of your total council expenditure.
Yes, that's true.
So when you look at it, you know, we're talking about, in percentage terms, relatively small investments for some pretty pretty good results in terms of both the engagement with your staff and creating that sense of, I guess, empowerment and making the council a much more attractive place to work, as well as, you know, providing some security for future generations.
I'd agree. It is a win-win situation in that regard. And, I mean, for instance, one of our community members who has 4,000 watts of PV on his roof was asked about, you know, the payback period. And his response is, well, you've got to look at how you look at it, he said, because it cost us $30,000. That's the price of a car. And we've got a lot more benefit out of this than we ever would have got out of a car.
Yes.
So, you know, just doing the simple payback is, I mean, you know, if we're really serious about TBL, then of course simple payback isn't the whole story.
Yes.
You know, carbon paybacks now are just as important.
Yes. Now, I've got another question sort of along the same lines, but it's, I think I can see that many people view putting effort and money and energy into reducing carbon as a bit of a waste of time, in that it presumably to them it doesn't provide any immediate benefit. If you had done nothing, yeah, if just you said, okay, I've got a target, we're not going to do anything about it. The council has set that, you know, 8 years ago now. Would you be any better off than you are today?
Better off financially or better off in terms of esprit de corps in the organisation?
However you choose to define better off.
We might have, I don't know, we might have been better off financially, not substantially. We certainly wouldn't have been as well off in terms of esprit de corps or sense of empowerment, as you put it, which is true. But even financially, while there's some costs involved, they're certainly not prohibitive. And in terms of the benefit, now the whole thing really has been a positive process, and you know, it's one that council as a whole is happy to continue with.
Yes,
that strong support from both the councillors and senior management, and right through the staff hierarchy. That point of view, I'd say it's been a plus all the way.
Good. Good.
So I certainly wouldn't want to. Look, of course, there are things that are barriers. There are barriers that you meet and you have to talk about it and overcome, but a lot of that's communication and, every barrier generally has a way around it. So it's not always going to be. I'm not saying it's not a rocky road at times with certain things being worked out, but. I think they're all the better for having been worked out.
Yes. So what's next for Willoughby City Council in cutting its greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, I think one of the things we've been working on for years and we'd actually like to get it into working is for our leisure centre to have a combined cogeneration and solar thermal system put in, that's a site that produces about 1,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide a year. Now, I mean, ironically, a lot of that is actually from gas, from the gas boiler, or most of it. The system has sort of not been optimally worked out where, you know, at the moment, if you turn on one hot water tap, the whole gas boiler turns on because there's no hot water storage tank. So, There's we really, having worked on that for years to actually get that up and running, and we've also got heat pump systems involved in there, so get it all integrated and working so that there is minimal fossil fuel use involved in actually heating the pool on that site. So that would be a great outcome. But I suppose next is really rolling out a whole lot of things. For instance, I mentioned sustainable business in passing and sustainable building. We want to give some dollar-for-dollar matching grants for our community to actually do sustainability retrofits for houses, and we're working with community groups to try and set up a sustainable building centre. So they're incredibly, so as well as doing sustainable building retrofits on our own buildings, that we can actually work with our community to do that. A sustainable business, as I said, half our community footprints from business. We're part of City Switch, which is now gone national, which is encouraging business tenants to meet a 4-star neighbours rating. So we're starting to take on local businesses who are joining up to that, which could have a big impact. And we're part of a council coalition that's just got a $1.7 million grant from the Urban Sustainability Program on a Sustainable Business North Shore program, a large part of which is a rating scheme for businesses. So if they do good things about sustainability, businesses should be able to get a gold standard in a rating scheme so that they can actually show they've done things about it and it can actually help in their market share. There's an awful lot more that can be done with business and really has to be done with business, and of course many of them are very positive and they're actually looking for that input in any case. But there's those. I say the audits getting out, but actually, you know, all the voltage controller systems for energy conservation, solar hot water systems, there's just a whole lot of streams that are coming through. One thing we're also particularly interested in promoting, we're probably the most active council in, certainly in Sydney at the moment, is the idea of turning our green waste into biochar. You know, that there is a pyrolysis process that you can turn the green waste into biochar, which is then additive for soil that reduces the need for fertiliser and water, which is pretty important in Australia. And it seems a crying waste that at the moment green waste is just going off to produce a glut of compost in the market here when it could be being turned into biochar, which is a carbon negative process that takes carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and puts it into the soil for thousands of years. So that's a project we're keen to promote in the next year.
Will that be able to take up all of your green waste stream?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're actually looking at it from the whole of the Nesrock region, the northern Sydney region of councils. That there's about 90,000 tonnes of green waste there. And when you do the maths, it actually works about a one-for-one in terms of carbon dioxide equivalents you could sequester into the soil. So you could basically take out 90,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere every year if we turned that into charcoal. And you'd also be helping to reduce water and fertiliser inputs onto the farms where you put it in the soil. So, as you know, Tim Flannery's observed, it looks like a win-win situation to him and to us as well.
Yes.
But it's like everything, every new technology, has its... you get a period where everyone's waiting for somebody else to act, unfortunately.
Yes.
So we're trying to promote... that happening, but it would certainly, given that there aren't that many carbon negative technologies around, we should promote the ones that we do know of.
That's really, really good, and that's great, and I hope that many other councils follow that lead, and I'm sure many will be watching you to see how that goes.
It's just a matter of there's a demonstration planned at the moment, or a quarter, and it's a matter of actually getting the system worked up with a full-scale plant so that you can actually get the product out there. There's an awful lot of farmers and agriculturalists who want the product, but it's sort of chicken and egg, really.
So when will that? When is that likely to be up and running by?
Well, we'd worked on a grant proposal for that, which unfortunately didn't get up. So we're still looking at it doing a truncated version of that ourselves through our own funding, and we're talking to the partners who are involved in that grant to see what we can do there. Because basically we need some more, and the Department of Primary Industry is very interested in being they're one of the partners involved, that we need more field trials just to show farmers just how big a difference this can make, and then there'll be the drive to actually get this stuff produced, you see. I mean, we already pay $70 a tonne to have it turned into compost. We'd rather be paying that money to have it turned into biochar that's actually, you know, taking thousands of tonnes of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere each year.
Yes, yes, yes. So, I imagine there'd be a lot of community support for that too.
Yeah, well, it's something we'll keep plugging. It's not helped by the fact that the federal government doesn't actually license technologies, they license facilities. So in terms of it getting licensed as a carbon offset, for example, you have to do it facility by facility, which sort of chicken and egg. Well, you know, no one's going to put the money in to build it unless you can be guaranteed it's going to be a carbon offset. But then, you know, you can't get the licensing until you've basically got it organised to be built. So anyway, it's a bit of a complex situation, but it'd be nice if it could be simplified.
Mm. Now, just to wrap up, what would your advice be to other councils wishing to reduce their carbon footprint?
Well, I think, obviously, I guess the first advice that goes through everything to do with climate change is to avoid denial. If we're going to, which is very common, I mean, I guess as a psychologist pointed out to me, we're all in denial about something, and I guess that's certainly true, but most of us, faced with enough evidence, move away from denial to accepting we're going to have to do something. So I think that's important to remind ourselves that we need to move past denial. So take any action. Well, I know it's an obvious, but if you're going to actually do something, you've got to get your baseline, make sure it's accurate. We had anomalies of one of our baseline. We had to work. We had to work out what was real and what was not. You've got to get accurate carbon auditing to see how you're going over time. The old Cities for Climate Protection system used to work back from your past carbon footprints, which of course means you can't see how your creep is going in the organisation, whether you're creeping upwards. You've got to have that commitment, and that's where you really need the commitment. Well, I know some councils don't have the commitment of all their councillors, but in our case we had our councillors and our senior management, so I feel like we were being fair dinkum about it on that level. So certainly helps if you've got that driving from the top as well as coming through the organisation from your staff, and that staff engagement, as I say, that small group workshops we did are probably the single best thing we've ever done to embed sustainability within the organisation. Basically we're asking them for their views of what we can do to improve things, and people really respond to that. Yes, setting targets, having targets is really important, and you've got to have the real funding on the ground to go and do that also. But of course, you know, in other words, to take some of this action, a lot of it will be cost neutral, but some of it is going to cost money, and therefore if you're really going to be fair dinkum, you're going to have to put that in your budget accordingly. And then you've got to really work on the $64 trillion question that everyone's working on, is how do you engage your community to actually take the actions, things like solar hot water and green power, that can really make big differences. And that's what we'll be trying on next year in March, when on Earth Hour Day, when we roll out our community climate campaign.
Oh, that's good. So in summary, that was firstly, you've got to stop denying, then you need to obviously get some sort of baseline.
Yeah? Well, baseline. And proper auditing.
Proper auditing, carbon auditing. You need commitment from your councillors and your senior management. Then you need
and
to be
engagement of your staff.
Engagement with your staff was number four.
Then finally, well, I guess your setting targets would really come back probably with your baseline and your auditing, but I sort of said it next in that one. Having a target definitely helps, and having a serious, strong target.
Having a target, being willing to invest.
Having the funding.
Engaging with the community and
making it and what I didn't say is that part of it, of making it easier for them to be able to take that action.
Make it easy for the community. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you very much, Dr. Hayden Washington.
It's my pleasure. I hope that's been of some interest.
Yes, yes, and it's great to see the role that Willoughby City Council is taking in response to the climate change challenge.
Well, I think councils in general are doing a lot about sustainability, and that's great because they're the coalface working with the community, and that's what we really need.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you very much, then.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.